Awesome, awesome day already. You ready to go home? I mean, I could go home right now. Just sing that. I'll be singing that for the rest of the day, you know. That was incredible, incredible. So glad to have you here this morning. Welcome to the Grove. If you're here for the first time, maybe you haven't been here in a long time, welcome back. We're glad that you're here. Something that's been true in my life throughout the course of my life, and I know this is part of human nature, so I know it's true for you too, is I have always struggled with comparing myself to other people. So I will look at myself, and the way that I'll figure out whether I'm okay or not is the measuring stick that I'll use are the people around me. And maybe I'll look to the left and see these people, and maybe they've got certain things that I wish I had, or they were a kind of person that I wish I was. And so I'll compare myself to them and then decide if I'm okay or not okay, and look to some people to my right and try and figure out, well, am I in a good place or not in a good place? And so one of the things that I've noticed about myself and is just trying to figure out how I'm doing compared to other people, which is never really healthy. And there have been plenty of times in my life where I've been like, God, I mean, help me to be content in you, to not do this. And it's just kind of one of those things that is part of our human nature, part of our sinful nature, that we measure how we're doing compared to how the other people are doing around us. Now, that if you try to think about it, maybe just think for a second, when is the first time that you can remember comparing yourself to other people? You know, I mean, when's the first time you can ever remember? And it's not just the competition that drives you, because maybe you're on a sports team and you're competing for a position, and that's a good thing because there's competition. But here's the thing: if you don't make that, or if you compare yourself with what other people have, or how many friends they have, or how much money they have, or how skinny they are, or how fit they are, or how successful their kids are, or how successful their spouse is, or how pretty their girlfriend is, if you compare yourself to other people and then you don't meet that standard and you define yourself by that, that's kind of what we're talking about. You define yourself and I define myself, and we all do it based on the people around us. Now, when's the first time you can remember doing that? For many of us, it may be very early. For all of us, it probably happened in high school, right? I can remember being in the first grade, and there was this girl that I really liked, and she chose somebody else than me. And I can remember as a first grader thinking, what's he got that I ain't got? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I was comparing myself to him wanting this girl as a girlfriend. And then, you know, you go through elementary school. There, you notice the difference when somebody chooses someone and they don't choose you. Maybe you go through middle school. Maybe there's pain for you associated with that, you know, being left out. You go into high school and, man, you talk about just the teenage years and insecurities and everything that sets in. And so all of a sudden, you know, there's people that are athletic. And maybe you're like, well, I'm not athletic. I wish I was athletic, because those guys have pretty girlfriends, or maybe that those girls have good-looking boyfriends, or maybe you look at people that were really smart in high school, and you're like, well, man, I'm not in the top 10%. I'm not even in the top 25%, and these folks are making all A's and making great grades on scores, and they know half of them know what they want to do for the rest of their life, and here I'm doing the best I can, and I really can't pull it together. Maybe it wasn't the athletic kids or the smart kids, but it was the popular kids, and you look at them, and you're like, man, I wish I had that many friends. I really don't. I'm not popular. I don't have that many friends, but I want to be like that. You know, I want to be that popular person. I want to be that athletic person. I want to be that smart person. And so you start comparing yourself to other people, and then you measure yourself by that, and then you define yourself by that. You know, it doesn't stop. I mean, it happens when you go to college and you see other people around you and you measure how much, you know, how wealthy that person is and how wealthy that person is and how wealthy you are or not. And then you look at this person and how certain they are about their future, and you're not certain about your future. And this person's chosen a career path and you haven't chosen a career path. And so, and then you look at other people maybe that don't have it together, but you feel like you do have it together. So you compare yourselves to them. And then you graduate college, and maybe you're dating, you know, and you compare yourself, you compare who you're dating with who other people are dating, you get engaged, and then a lot of your friends are getting engaged, and listen, the monster never stops. I mean, it never takes a break. And if you're really honest with yourself, you're like, well, they're getting engaged, maybe how did he propose to her, and what was their engagement like, and they start planning their wedding, and what's their wedding going to be like, and what's our wedding look like, and is their wedding going to be better than our wedding, and, you know, am I going to be happy with the way that we plan our wedding, and our wedding's got to be better, and it's got to be best, you know, and then it's like, where are they going to to go on their honeymoon. Where are we going to go on our honeymoon? You know, and then you get married, and then it's like, well, did they rent or did they buy? If they bought, is their house bigger than ours? You know, it just doesn't stop. And you get married, and you compare yourselves to each other, and then you start having kids. And man, if you've never compared yourself much to other people, when you start having kids, that's when the comparisons come out, because you know they're a reflection of you. You don't say that. You just want what's best for them. But really, you're the whole time, from the time that they're born until I guess the time that you die, you're wanting your kids to compete against every other kid. I mean, you get together with your friends and your kids just barely walking. All the kids are there, and you're like, you're wanting your kid to walk before those kids walk. And you're like, come on, buddy, you can do it. You can do it. You walk first and you walk faster, you know. And you look at your friend's kids over there, and he's eating crayons, and you're thinking, well, my kid's smarter than that kid. I tell you that right now. And so, you know, you look a little chucky, and you think, crayon eater, I love you. Hey, buddy, how you doing? And you're just comparing your kids to their kids all through, you know, pre-K, and then they go to elementary school, and it's, can they run faster? And can your kids jump higher? And, you know, are they scoring better on tests? They have more friends. It doesn't stop in middle school. And then all of a sudden, your kids are in high school, just like when you were in high school, and you want to make sure that your daughter has more friends than any of the other daughters, and your son is like, he's got, you know, he's doing better than anybody else. And then we compete, but we don't say we compete through our kids. We say we just want what's best for them. That's what we say. But then all of a sudden, all of our comparisons come out, because here's the deal. We're not only comparing our kids to them, we're comparing ourselves as parents to other parents. That's what we're really doing, although we don't admit that to ourselves. We say, I just want what's best for my child. But the whole time, you know, if we're really, really honest, it's about us comparing ourselves to other parents. And so we compete, and we got helicopter moms and over-involved dads, and we're just comparing and comparing. And, you know, are your kids smarter? And are they getting in better schools? Are they scoring higher? Do they have more friends? Are they having more success on the athletic field? Whatever it is, you know, and then so we compete through there. And then our kids go to college, and then our kids get engaged, and then we become grandparents, and what are we doing? Come on now, you got to walk faster than those other grandkids, you know. When we start competing and we start comparing, and it never stops unless we begin to get it under control, unless we begin to find the answer. And here's the great thing, we're going to look at it this morning. There's some wonderful guidance in Scripture about what do we do when we begin to compare ourselves to other people. Listen, you start dating, and it's just, you know, it's a never-ending process. And here's what happens is, the way that it kind of sneaks up on us in a way is we look at other people. Let's just say we look to our left, and we see these people. All right? They seem to be happier. They seem to be fitter. She's skinnier. He's handsomer. They have more money. They have a better house. They have a nicer car. They have better vacations, you know? And so all of a sudden, you're comparing yourself to them, and it's like, I just want a little-er, you know? Just a little-er, E-R. I just want to be a little skinnier, you know? And so you look at them, and it's like, I just want to be a little skinnier, you know? I just want to be a little wealthier, you know? I just want to be a little bit more popular-er, you know? I just want to be a little bit more talented-er, you know, than that person. So we start measuring ourselves to folks. We compare ourselves to what they have, and we just want a little bit of you know. We start dating, and we start putting that pressure on each other, you know. It's just, well, I'd just like for my boyfriend to be a little more handsomer, you know. I'd like for him to be a little bit richer. I'd like for her to be a little bit cuter. And then you get married, and spouses do it to each other, and you start asking him to be a little bit more of this-er, and you ask her to be a little bit more of that-er. And you use the excuse sometimes of, I just want them to reach their full potential. I just want them to achieve all they can achieve. I just want them to have the best health. But here's the deal. Really what's happening, same way with our kids, when we start pushing other people to do the things we want them to be more-er of, whatever it is, really, it's what we want. It's how we see ourselves. It's how we see ourselves married to this person. It's how we see ourselves as parents compared to other parents. And listen, this is a beast that all of us struggle with. I struggle with it, and you struggle with it. And so all of a sudden, you know, our kids are going to school, and they're taking tests, and maybe they're applying for schools or whatever it is. And so we start wanting more-er in our kids. And when we're really honest, it really is more about us than it is them. And the worst part is this. Here's the ugly part. This is the part that you and I really don't admit to anybody else, but it's still true in our hearts. is that there are people in your life, and when something good happens to them, even though you kind of look at them and, I mean, you know, they've got it more together. I mean, it's almost like they just live a worry-free life. She has no wrinkles. I mean, you know, his car's never dirty. You know, it seems like they got plenty of financial margin. You know, and you look at their life and you're like, dadgum, how can anybody have it that much together? You know, and something good happens in their life, and on the outside you're like, hey, congratulations, that's wonderful. I mean, that's really how you're feeling, because you would never say this to anybody else. But there's that wicked, ugly, evil, sinful part of us that really can't celebrate with them. Because why? Because we compare ourselves to them. Now, they didn't, you know, they didn't do anything to us, but that's that wicked part of us. And then this is what's worse. Now, listen, before I say this, you're going to say, man, Scott, you're being kind of heavy today. You know when you go out for, I go for an annual, pretty good about going for an annual checkup every year. I go in, going for an annual checkup, you know, he reviews my history. I talk to him about anything over the past year that I've had problems with. And so we kind of talk about the problems, you know, and then we come up with solutions. Now, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk about solutions, okay? Today, we're going to define the problem, and it can be a little ugly. So this is kind of what today's going to be like. And then there are those times of the people that you compare yourself to. It's not that something good happened in their life, something bad happened in their life. You know, maybe there was a hiccup. Maybe their kid had a failure. Maybe things didn't really go their way so well, and they've hit a rough patch. And on the outside, you say, man, I am so sorry. And on the inside, you're kind of high-fiving yourself. Because you're thinking, the galaxy is finally bringing everything to balance. Because these people can't have it all together and me not have it together. So this is nature's way of evening everything out. Listen, that is just our wicked part of us that thinks that and believes that. Now, here's another side. It's not only the people that we look at and we go, man, they just, you know, I mean, he's healthier and he runs faster and he makes more money and, you know, and they have a nicer car and newer car. It's not only those folks, it's these folks to your right, to your left, my right. But it's these folks, and those are the folks that you look at and you go, see, I'm actually in a better position than you are. These folks are in a better position than I am. But see, you're a little bit poorer than me. And your daughter's a little bit shorter than she needs to be. Your son's a little bit slower. And you're definitely a lot nerdier. I mean, I might be a nerd, but you're definitely a lot nerdier than I am. And then we begin feeling superior. So here is a situation to my left where we're looking at people and we feel less than, you know? We're defining ourselves by what we're not. And then we look at folks over here who have less. And then we begin to feel better about ourselves because of what we have. And both are just as wicked and both are just as sinful. Both are just as unhealthy. So how do we stop that? That's what we're going to talk a little bit about today. How do we get a hold on that? So, and then there are folks that are like this. Maybe you're not a person and you just know this about yourself. If you were just honest with yourself, you don't have to talk to anybody else this morning. Just think about yourself. You're not the guy, you're not the girl that wants to have a little bit better. You want the cuter, the handsomer, you know, the better, the bigger, the more popular-er. You want the EST. You don't want the ER. I mean, you want to be the prettiest, you know? You want to be the wealthiest. You want to be the gold standard, the measure for what everybody else in your neighborhood, maybe your tribe or your environment or your wherever it is. Maybe it's your work or your office place or your larger family or the team or the people you hang out with at school or whatever it is. But you want to be the EST. You know what I'm saying? You want to be the funniest. You want to be the most popular. Est. I mean, that's what you want to be. You want to be the most retweeted est. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you want to be it. You want to be that person. And here's another kind of person. Maybe you have a good handle on the people that have more than you, the better than you, the bigger than you, and you don't really resent them for it. But the way you see yourself is you're down on yourself. You kind of dislike yourself. You kind of settled into, our family's never going to be as happy as that family. We're never going to have the house that they have. We're never going to be have as good a marriage as they have. And so you just kind of settle into this, I'm not a good person. You know, you've chosen to believe some things about yourself that are not true because you've defined yourself for so long by what other people have. You've compared yourself to other people for so long about what you have and what they don't, that it's kind of led you to this place that is so unhealthy. That's what we're talking about this morning. We're going to talk about in Ecclesiastes. If you got your Bibles, you can turn there. Turn to Ecclesiastes or on your devices. We'll look at that in just a moment. And here's the deal. Here's the bottom line. And I want to give you the bottom line before we ever read the scriptures, okay? And then we'll revisit the bottom line at the very end. The bottom line is this: there is no win in comparison. If you got an index card or a place to, or put that in your phone or put that somewhere where you'll see it, because everybody struggles with this. Maybe if you struggle with this, maybe you feel like more than anybody. Write this down. There's no win in comparison. You know why? Because there's no finish line. There's never a time when you're done. Because if you struggle with that, you're going to struggle with it for the rest. There's never going to be a season unless you begin to get a hold of it. Unless you begin to find out who and where are you going to mirror yourself against? If it's not going to be against other people, where will it be? So here's the deal. There's no win in comparison. There is no peace in that. There's no tranquility in that. There's no victory in that. It all ends up in a bad place. So Solomon was the greatest, was the wisest man that ever lived. And he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, okay? And so God appointed Solomon to build the temple. Solomon created one of the seven wonders of the world. He was the wealthiest person of his lifetime in the entire world. Kings and queens came from around the world to sit at Solomon's feet to hear the wisdom that he would share with them. And Solomon wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. And it's his observations on life. A great book for you and I to read just when we're wanting wisdom, just to read through it. Very easy to read, very easy to understand, very practical to our life. So we're going to pick up in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, beginning with verse 4. And Solomon says this: "And I saw that all toil and achievement spring from one person's envy of another." Wow, that's exactly what we've been talking about, right? All toil and achievement spring from one person's envy of another. He said it's this drive, this competition between each other that I'm going to measure myself by you to see if I'm okay or not. And so if I look at you and I go, am I okay? No, I'm not okay. Am I okay? Yeah, I'm doing okay. Are my kids okay? Nah, my kids are not okay. They got to be more Are my kids okay? Yeah, my kids are the est, you know? I mean, so we begin to compare ourselves. And Solomon says, listen, this is what I've noticed. In my observations of life, as I've viewed human nature, as I saw all the toil and achievement spring from one person's envy of another. And he's saying we determine where we are based on everybody else. Look again in verse 4. "This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind." What does that mean? Can you catch the wind? Can you hold it? Solomon said, no, you can't catch the wind. And so what's he saying? Every time you're scrolling through social media and you go, dang, I wish I was there. Man, I wish I'd been invited. Wow, I wish my kids had been invited. Wow, that's a great vacation. Man, that's a nice boat. That's a cool car. And it's just this envy. You know, we all struggle with it. Man, I've talked to so many people. Here, you and I struggle with comparison because we're aware. Now, if this was 1880 and we lived on the prairie and we went into town once a week for supplies and we never saw anybody, we'd probably struggle with it a lot less. But it's 2015. The social media, we have all kinds of, we can keep up with everybody about every moment of their day almost. And if there's parts of you that are really struggling with that, just kind of take a break. Just say, you know what, maybe you don't even tell anybody, I just need to take a break from social media because I'm tempted to just compare myself. I don't scroll through and go, man, that's awesome for them. You celebrate, you know. You just celebrate with everybody. It doesn't bring you up. It kind of brings you down. Maybe you just need to take a break from it. Maybe that would be good for you. And so Solomon says, listen, here's the deal. This whole, it's meaningless. It's a chasing after the wind. Every time I decide, you know what? I'm going to work harder and make more money because he makes more money. Solomon says, man, that's a chasing after the wind. It's meaningless. You know what? I'm going to try to get prettier for my boyfriend because, man, when I see them as a couple, they look like the perfect couple, and I want to be the perfect couple. I want to start shopping where she shops, and, you know, I'm going to get a car because he's got a car, and, you know what? We're going to get a house because, man, I love their house. Our house is, you know, man, we just need this. And Solomon says, listen, is it wrong to work hard? No. Is it okay to compete? Yes. Solomon would say, listen, if we were to ask Solomon, should you just kind of be lazy? Solomon would say, absolutely not. In fact, look at this. Look at verse 5. Verse 5 says this, fools fold their hands and ruin themselves. So Solomon's not saying, if you were to say, Solomon, are you saying that we shouldn't compete? Are you saying we shouldn't have drive? Or are you saying that we shouldn't kind of, you know, beat out the other person? No, not when it's healthy competition. That's not what he's talking about. He's saying, I'm just saying that when you define yourself by that person, when you're less than, or when you think you're better than because of your comparison to that person, that's a chasing after the wind. It's meaningless. So every time you're motivated to do, or every time you're motivated to be based on someone else, he would say, listen, that's meaningless. But he says, listen, fools fold their hands and ruin themselves. Look at verse 6. And this is a great verse to memorize. Listen, this is kind of a great theme verse for this. Great verse to write down. Put it somewhere where you'll see it. This is what Solomon says. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. Let's read that one more time. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. What's he saying there? Well, this is what he's doing. He's using some Hebrew imagery to say this. You know what one hand open is he saying? He's saying what one hand open represents is that God can put anything in that hand and God can take anything out of it. And he said, better one hand open with tranquility than two hands that are just trying to get all you can get, you know? I see what they have and I want to get it. You know, I want est. I want more. I see myself as less than because of what they have. I see myself as better than because of what they have. And Solomon says, that's meaningless. Better one hand open and work hard with this hand. You know, work hard. Be an achiever. Compete with other people. Compete against yourself. Be the best that you can be. But keep one hand open to receive from God and give to God. But if you live life like this, and I mean, it's never enough, and you just want two handfuls all the time, you know where that'll lead? You'll just want a third handful. Because you'll never be content. So Solomon says this, better one hand open with tranquility than two handfuls and chasing after the wind. So let's go on. Verse 7 says this. Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. Now, he's observing someone. This could be a parable, or he could have really seen this person. Verse 8. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. Now, what's he saying there? He means that he didn't have anyone to give his inheritance to. Women were not allowed at that time, 3,000 years ago in that culture, to inherit. They were seen as second-class citizens. And so he didn't have a brother, and he didn't have a son. So there was no one to pass his inheritance on to. Verse 8, there was no end to his toil, this guy. Yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. He had all kinds of stuff. I mean, people would look at him and he would be the standard. And he just kept working and working and working. He wanted to achieve more. He wanted to have more. He couldn't stop. You know, it was just, I got to have more. I got to have more. And it wasn't about being the best that he could be. It was just not being content, always being driven, always having to have more. And Solomon said, that's what I observed about his life. He had two handfuls, and then it wasn't enough. Verse 8. And then he asked himself this question one day. He kind of woke up. For whom am I toiling, he asked. And why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? You know, it's kind of like one day he woke up and said, why am I doing this? I'm not happy. I mean, I'm working. And if part of life is to enjoy life, if it's to be happy, if it's to enjoy the people around you, if it's to enjoy the fruits of your labor, I'm not, because I never rest. I just keep wanting more. I just keep wanting what other people have. And it's never enough. Some would say, listen, live life like this. Live life, work hard with one hand, keep one hand open. You know? Because you'll never be satisfied as long as you just want more. Verse 8, this too is meaningless, a miserable business. What's he saying? He's saying, listen, if you're always thinking about what other people's kids' grades are, and you're always thinking about what their kids are doing on weekends, and you're always thinking about what their kids are achieving or who their friends are, if you're always thinking about how much money you have compared to someone else, if you're always thinking about how much better looking someone is or how much more popular they are or how they have got life figured out and they're on a better track than you, listen, Solomon would say, listen, stop. It's meaningless. It's a chasing after the wind. Now, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk about the solution for that. Okay? But that's what Solomon is saying. So the bottom line is this. There's no win in competition. There's no win in comparison. There's no win in comparison. Why? Because there's no finish line. You'll never find tranquility. The more you compare yourselves to other people, number one, will lead to a place of where you're just depressed and you don't feel good about it. The second thing is you'll feel like you're better. It leads to pride. You'll feel like you're better than someone else. So there's no win in comparison. Now, here's the deal. Every one of us is going to look to someone to tell us that we're okay. All of us. And we should. All of us are going to look to someone or something to measure our life by to tell us, listen, dude, you're doing a good job. You're on the right path. You don't need to do any more. You don't need to do any less. I think you're doing okay. I just want to pat you on the back and tell you what a great job you're doing. We all need that. And that's what we're looking for a lot of times. The question for you that I want you to ask yourself this week before we come back together next week is, what's the standard? What am I using to reflect my own value? What am I looking to go, do I measure up to that? What am I mirroring myself after? Is it my boss? Is it because, he's got a great wife and a great house and a great kids and he's got plenty of money. Man, I want to be like him. Is it another family member? You know, because they have favor with other people in your family and you don't, but you want to be like them? I mean, is it one of your best friends because they seem to have it more together and nobody else knows this, but you're just kind of eaten up with a little bit of envy? You know, is it someone at work that you work with? What's the standard? What's the mirror? Who are you looking to measure your life by? And Solomon would say, listen, every time we do it from somebody else, it's meaningless. So that's the big question. That's what we're going to talk about next week. So, where are you looking to measure yourself? Now, I want to leave you with several questions this morning, just to ask yourself, just to prod you to think. It's not going to feel comfortable, okay? Here's about four or five questions. First question is this, before we leave. Are you exhausted from trying to keep up with, just fill in the blank, you know? I mean, is there part of you that just wishes that friend, you just wish you didn't know what they have, you know? I mean, it would be so much better if you didn't know what kind of vacations they went on, you know? It'd be so much better if you didn't know what they have. I mean, you wouldn't struggle with as much. Are you exhausted from trying to keep up with? Now, listen, here, it's not going to be helpful for us unless we're just really honest with ourselves. We can sit and be defensive and go, I don't do that. But just ask yourself, do I find myself being driven by that? And here's the thing. Wouldn't it be awesome if there was just a check in our spirit and we caught ourselves when we started to do that? Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if we just reminded ourselves, that's just a chasing after the wind. Better one handful with tranquility and one hand open than two handfuls and a chasing after the wind. Wouldn't it be great if we just reminded ourselves every time we got ready to compare ourselves? God, help me. Help me to be content. What do you want me to, who do you want me to mirror my life after? Now, you probably got a pretty good guess where we're going next week. Who do you want me to compare myself to? There's one really good person that we can compare ourselves to. And I want to tell you something. When you find yourself doing that, if you can just stop and say, God, I just want to say right now, the person that I'm jealous of, the person that I want to compare myself to, thank you for that person. Thank you for blessing them. I just want to stop. And I want to stop and say, God, help me to compare myself to Jesus. Help me to be a person of contentment. You know, the older that I get, and I meet people that say this, and I used to just kind of blow it off as a saying. You ever heard somebody say, you say, how are you doing today? And I know people that will say, better than I deserve. And I used to just kind of walk past it. Well, it's just kind of a saying. You know, it's kind of like saying, how are you doing today? Well, better to be above the ground than below it. You know, it's kind of, you see people like that, you know, and you just kind of blow it off. Well, that's just a crazy saying, a crazy coot. I'm just going to go on my way. And so you kind of, you meet people and you say, you know, how are you doing? And they say, better than I deserve. And you know what? I know a lot of people like that that have said that before, and they really, really mean it. It's really true in their life because they know they deserve wrath. They know they deserve the punishment for their transgressions. And they know that Jesus came in and showed His grace. Man, I'm going to tell you that third song that we sang this morning, when it said, He will wipe away your tears and restore your wasted years. That's grace. You ever been through some seasons where you're like, God, I'm sorry. Those are some wasted years. I was just in the middle of sin, and I was focused on myself and His promise. You want to know what grace is? Grace is not just, I forgive you. You know what? I'm going to restore those wasted years. I'm going to love you. I'm going to redeem you. I'm going to make you stronger than you've ever been. I'm going to use you as a light to other people. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to fill you with joy. And when you see someone who's been blessed with family, who's been blessed with friends, who've been blessed with a roof over their head and blessed where they don't have to think about where their food's coming from, and you say, how are you doing? And they say, better than I deserve. That's someone who's begun the journey or continuing the journey of living in contentment. That's contentment, right? And you know what? You can get there. And I can get there. And if we stop and pause and say, you know what, God, I am so tempted to compare myself to this person right now. I thank you for that person. I'm so tempted to think that I'm better than that person right now because of the way they look or because of the way they talk or because of their situation in life. God, help remind me. Keep my spirit in check. Help me to know that that's a chasing after the wind. God, I only want to compare myself to Jesus. I want to use Him as the gold standard of my life. That's contentment. Let me ask you this question. Are you broke from trying to keep up with fill in the blank? You found yourself in a financial hole. You found yourself with very little financial margin. In fact, you may be in the hole. You don't really have much money at all to just kind of, you know, be able to do what you need sometimes or do what you want because you've gotten yourself in a financial hole. And you may use the excuse to say, well, it's the economy, or you remember that time I was out of work for 2 or 3 months and that just set us way back. But here's something, too, we just need to be real honest about. What kind of financial decisions have you made just based on the people that you look to? You look to your left and you look to your right and you go, man, yeah, I need this kind of house. I need this kind of car. I need this credit card. I really need those clothes. I know it is going in a little bit of debt and living above my means. But here's the question. Are you going broke? Are you in the hole financially because you've been trying to live up to fill in the blank to somebody else? And just be honest with yourself. Are you allowing what others have to keep you from enjoying what you have? I mean, what you have is good. You have a car that runs. You have a bicycle that runs. You have food. You have a place over your head. I mean, you know, there's a lot of Saturdays where we may be just working around the house, you know. You know what that's like. You know, you're just working around your house. You're working in the yard. Maybe you've got your yard looking really good, you know. You're kind of standing back looking at it. There's been a lot of sun, a lot of rain. Your yard's looking thick, and you're like, man, that looks good. I'm doing a good job. Our place is looking good. Trim those bushes, you know. Your wife's working inside. She's got the house looking good. It's not perfect. You know, you got things to work on. I mean, but you've got a house. You've got an apartment. You've got a condo. You've got a place that is yours, and it's shelter for you. You know, you've got this place, you know. And maybe you even say to each other, man, I just love where we live. I know it's small, or I know it's not perfect, or I know there's some things that need to be. I just love where we live. Man, we're so blessed. And then you get invited over to your friend's house for dinner that night. And you walk in. And he's got 10-foot ceilings and you got 9-foot ceilings. And he's got 6-inch crown molding and you've got 3-inch crown molding. And you're like, our place is a dump. I hate our place. I'm putting our place up for sale next week. You know? Because this is what they have. You can't enjoy what you have because you're looking at what everybody else has. You've only got 2 kids and 4 bedrooms, but you go to your friend's house, they got 5 bedrooms and a basement, and you're like, well, we're in a poorhouse. I mean, we got to figure out something to do, honey. We got to get on the stick. I mean, we got to move. I mean, this is what we need. I mean, we really need this. You can't enjoy what you have because of what other people have. Do you ever find yourself like that? I mean, you've got food, you've got a meal plan, you got money coming in, you've got a job, you've got a wife that loves you, you've got a husband that serves you, your kids are healthy. That leads us to the next question. Do you enjoy your kids, or are you driving them crazy because of what everyone else's kids are accomplishing? I mean, it's just, you got to go to this tonight, and you got to go to this weekend, because I really feel like you're gifted at this, and I just want you to flourish with this. And I just want you to know I'm just looking out for your own best interests. I just want you to achieve your full potential, because there's something, you always want them to be the best at whatever it is we feel like that they're talented at, and we want them to make the best grades, and we're driving, and we're cracking that whip, and have you taken this test, and have you applied for this scholarship, and are you doing well in this class, and are you making these grades? Do you enjoy your kids? Or is it just a constant drive for more? Do your kids enjoy you? Or when they walk into the room, do they feel judged and evaluated? Because you're always pushing for more. Always, can't you just be more social, honey? Can't you just hang out with more friends? Did you see the boyfriend that she has? Wouldn't that be wonderful? Have you thought about trying out for this? What kind of grades you make? Have you studied enough for this? Listen, nothing wrong with challenging our kids, obviously. But do you enjoy your kids? Do you set aside time to be together and to laugh and to have time together? And the last question is this, and it's the ugliest. And it's the hardest, and it's the one that stings the worst. Who would you secretly enjoy seeing fail? Kind of goes back to that ugly part of us, you know? And when we do, we just want to pause and go, God, help me. I know it's my sin nature. I know it's the way I'm bent, but I don't want to be that kind of person. I want you to retrain me, God. I want you to help me develop a new habit. I don't want to see other people fail. I don't want to burn with envy. I don't want to burn with jealousy. God, I know it may be a long journey. I want you to make me stop. I want to say thank you for that person. Thank you for what you're doing in their life. I want to say thank you for what I have. I don't deserve any more than what I have. God, I just want to thank you that Jesus is the perfect model for me to model my life after. But God, I am tired of feeling like I'm trying to measure up to this person and I feel less than, or I feel better than this person because I have it more together than they do. Oh God, solve my wicked heart. Because here's the truth. There's no win in comparison. And Solomon would say this, isn't it better to live life with one hand open? God, what do you want to give me? What do you want to take from me? Work hard with the other hand. Rather than just trying to get something that you feel like you need that you don't have. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could truly celebrate the victories in other people's lives? Because you know what? It is impossible to genuinely love someone that you can't want the best for them. And it's impossible to genuinely love your family members when you feel like they're never enough. There's no win in comparison. There's no tranquility. There's no peace. But you know what? The Scripture is full of where we can find our peace, of where we can find tranquility. Who are you comparing yourself against? What's your mirror? That's what we're going to talk about next week, okay? Would you bow your head? Let's pray together. God, I know that today is, it's just like, man, it's It's like trying to clean a wound. It just hurts, you know? But God, I just know that you're good. I know that you've given us a model in Jesus that's all good, all loving, all knowing. I thank you for him. And I just pray that you would bring us back next week. Walk us through this. God, help us to be people that keep this comparison in check. That we want to live for you. That we want to model our life after you. And that we just can truly celebrate for the good things that happen in other people's lives. That if we're going to compete against anyone, let's compete against ourselves. If we're going to compare ourselves to anyone, let's compare ourselves to Jesus and try to live like him. So God, I pray that you would fill us, that you would make us aware, that you would sober our hearts and minds today and this week with what we struggle with. Make us aware when we're seeing pictures or images or scrolling through or hearing conversations or watching people and saying, I want that. So God, help us, bring us to a place where we're so grateful for who you are and what you've done in our lives. And we're so content with who you are. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Amen. We're going to take up our offering here in just a second. And I want to make you aware of a couple of things that are going on. If you got a handout when you came in, would you take that out? Because in that handout, there is a little insert, an orange one, that talks about small group Bible studies here at the Grove. Those are adult Bible studies that meet through the week for about an hour and a half. So it doesn't take up your whole evening. It's a great way to get to know other adults, to make friendships, and it's a great way to grow in your relationship with Christ. As you gather around the Bible, talk about some areas of your life, some things that apply to you. And, you know, here's the thing. Sometimes when we get busy and we enter into certain stages of life where we have jobs and our kids have a lot going on, it's really difficult for us to be intentional about friendships. Small groups are a great way to make the right kinds of friendships, people that are in the same stage of life that you are, and a great way for you to look into the Scriptures with other people. Nobody's going to call on you to pray. Nobody's going to call on you to read. You can come and get a piece of cake and a cup of coffee and just sit and listen. Or you can come and participate as much as you like. Now, you'll see there's a men's Bible study, a women's Bible study, an adult Bible study, and a Bible study for 20-somethings. Okay, that's 20-somethings married, 20-somethings single. And so any of those that you're interested in, and if none of those nights or none of those times fit you, just check the last box and we'll be in touch with you about maybe an alternative time that would meet for you to have Bible study. So look at that, fill that out, put it in the offering basket this morning, or give it to a staff member, coordinator when the service is over. The other thing is this, you'll see the other little insert, there's several announcements on there about children's ministry, student ministry, but one of the things I wanted to highlight to you today is we have a ministry to hospice patients, the Tenova Hospice here in Halls. We have a ministry to those folks, and we have folks who cook food, who fix food, or if you're like me, you don't cook it. Somebody else cooks it. You just pick it up, and you take it. We have folks who take food over to the hospice here, the Tenova Hospice in Halls, and just put it out there for family members who are spending time with a loved one in their last days and weeks. And sometimes family members come in and, you know, they just need somebody to talk to. Sometimes they just need to be quiet and they just eat, and we give them that freedom to do that. There's staff there that spend their days and nights caring for people in need, and sometimes it's just a great ministry to them. So we have people who once a month take food to the hospice here in Halls. And if you'd like to be a part of that, Julie Beeler is our coordinator, and her phone number and email address are there on the insert, and so you can get in touch with her if you'd like to participate in that. Here's one thing I just want to kind of make you aware of as we get ready to take up our offering, is our church is 5.5 years old. For a couple years, we worshiped at the Halls Theater. For the last 3 years or more, we've been here at the school. And so we're always talking and always praying and always looking for where a permanent home that we could have 7 days a week would be for us. We really feel like that we're kind of at the stage and the age where a facility that we could have 7 days a week would be a tool that would really help us to do ministry even more successfully, efficiently, what's the word I'm looking for? Better, I don't know. But a facility that we can have 7 days a week that our students can use, that our adults can use, that we have our own preschool and children's rooms that we can use, on Sunday mornings. It would be great for our worship ministry on Sunday mornings to have our own space, to have our own facility. So we've been looking at different places. And one of the things that we kind of came to a piece about is that in terms of buying land and building, that's probably step two from where we are right now, because the figures are just really big figures on what that takes to buy land and build. And we really don't feel like that we're ready for that. So really what we've kind of thought that we would probably do is rent, is lease, maybe some retail space, build it out, make it into a worship center and place for Grove Kids, maybe some offices. And so we've considered that, we've looked. But most recently, we've had an opportunity to look at something for purchase, which kind of surprised us. We didn't really feel like that we would probably purchase something. But there's a piece of property in Halls. It's a couple, 2.5 acres. It's got about 9,000 square feet of space, which would be really good for us, about 9,000 and enough parking, we think. And it's for sale instead of lease, and we feel like we might be able to swing it in terms of what the price might be. We have not decided to do that. We have just started looking at it. I just wanted to make you aware of it, to ask you to pray whether that's the right opportunity for us. So far, things look good on that, but we're really at the very beginning stages of it. We've looked at it a couple of times. We're enlisting some other folks' opinions, architects, just to say, hey, what would it take for us to take these buildings and build them out to make them a worship center and Grow Kids space, and could we afford that? What would that mean for us? We have saved for the last 5.5 years. We've saved about $170,000. And so we know that if we did that, we would need to raise more money, probably a short campaign. We've never done a campaign of any sort. When I say campaign, that's maybe a word that not everybody's familiar with. That's just to raise some money to be able to get into the facility that we would like to use to be able to minister effectively in our community. And so that's something that we're praying about. And we're just in the stage of gathering information. And many of you are like me. I just like to gather all the information, pray about it as we go along, and then make a decision once we have all the information. So we're just in the information gathering stage. And we'll make you aware every week as we go forward about what things are looking like, because we, more than anything, we need your prayers. And we'll be providing you with specific finances about what things look like, a prayer guide that we can have going forward. But I will say this in a hopeful tone, that of all the 5.5 years, of all the many different things we've looked at, we've been down the road on several different places, this probably looks like the most promising at this point. So we ask you just to be praying for us about that. It's very exciting to think about being able to have our own place in this community and to be able to use that to do what our mission is, to see people come to know Christ and become disciples of His and to love our community. That's the whole reason that we would want a building. We never want the building to be our focus. People are our focus. We never want it to be a distraction. We never want it to be to tie our hands. And we've seen plenty of ministries where that's happened, and we don't want to be in that position. So we'll continue to make you aware of what's going on. Our stewardship team and our staff, because we do not have elders yet, we will one day. So at this point, our stewardship team and our staff have been looking at that, talking about that. And we'll be enlisting your help, because we're going to need folks that are that know even more than we do about construction and about electrical work and about building. And so if you have any of those skills, we'd love to know about that as we move forward. But we're going to take up our offering here in just a moment, and I'm going to lead us in prayer. And feel free to ask us questions at any point, at any time. Be happy to tell you where we are and what's going on with that. Would you bow your head? Let's pray together. God, thank you so much for just providing for every need. Thank you for always being right on time. We prayed about so many things in the past that it just wasn't the right timing. And if this is not the right timing, and if it's not right, the right place, we know that you'll make that clear. We ask you, God, to do that, because we are content. We are not satisfied with who we are, but we're content with who you are. And we're content with what when you say to move and when you say to be still. And so we just want to be obedient to you. And so, God, as we take up our offering this morning, I just want to thank you for all the ways that you bless us. Thank you for what we saw last week with lives expressed, just saying, listen, I want the world to know that I follow Jesus. I thank you for that picture of changed lives. And God, we just ask that every penny goes towards that. Every dollar, every dime goes towards seeing people come to know you. Adults saying yes to Jesus for the very first time in their life. College students, high school students, and children, boys and girls, men and women, saying yes to you and to become a disciple of yours. God, that's what we want more than anything. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.